Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, host of Your Call. You're listening to the Project 2025 What's in It podcast, a special series from KALW Public Media about the far right's agenda outlined in what they're calling Project 2025 Mandate for Leadership, the Conservative Promise. This Heritage Foundation-led plan lays out a comprehensive agenda to transform the United States into a conservative Christian nation under Donald Trump. Project 2025 would dismantle the administrative state and ensure arch-conservative rule for decades to come. It would affect all aspects of life and would be implemented by expanding presidential powers and eliminating federal agencies. We're kicking off this series by focusing on how Project 2025 would upend democratic norms, consolidate the power of the executive office, and usher in an authoritarian state. One note before we dig in. When this show originally aired live on KALW, we took calls and emails. If you have a comment or perspective to share, email us at project2025@kalw.org. Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, recently told MSNBC that for the first time in the history of the conservative movement, Project 2025 is an apparatus for policy and personnel.
The work of the Heritage Foundation was to institutionalize Trumpism. Trumpism as a new version of conservatism, a conservatism that recognizes that by every objective measure, the United States is weaker in 2024 than it was in 1984. We also happen to think that's reversible, by the way. We're ultimately optimists. And by institutionalizing Trumpism, what we're saying is that even though we are known as Ronald Reagan's think tank, I'm a son of the Reagan Revolution, I'm very proud of that, that's 40 years ago. And we need to understand what time it is in America. And right now, Donald Trump, whether someone likes it or not, I happen to like it, is the standard bearer for conservatism.
That was Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, speaking recently on MSNBC. We plan to invite Kevin Roberts to join a future show. Project 2025 would affect nearly all aspects of life. This extreme right-wing blueprint would ban medication abortion, basically force women to have children in all instances, roll back LGBTQ plus rights, expand oil drilling and coal mining, and deport 11 million undocumented immigrants. It would also use the Department of Justice as a tool to punish Donald Trump's opponents and make it possible to fire over 50,000 federal employees and replace them with MAGA loyalists. In the first hour of our Project 2025 series, we're focusing on how the policies of this plan would upend democratic norms, consolidate the power of the executive office, and usher in an authoritarian state. Today, we're joined by three guests. Matt Cohen is senior staff writer with Democracy Docket, an online news platform about voting rights and elections in the courts. Matt Cohen covers elections, voting rights, and threats to democracy. He authored a Project 2025 guide for Democracy Docket. Hi, Matt. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Rose. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by John Nichols, national affairs correspondent for The Nation. John has written many books, including his latest, co-written with Senator Bernie Sanders, a New York Times bestseller, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. The Nation published a special series on Project 2025. John Nichols' piece is called Project 2025's Guide to Subverting Democracy. Hi, John. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, it's great to be with you and with the other folks who are joining us today.
And Tony Kark is executive director of Accountable.us, an organization that exposes conflicts of interest and shines a light on powerful special interests. Accountable.us has launched a campaign called Expose Project 2025. Hi, Tony. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have all of you. We decided to do a series on Project 2025 to really talk about the details in this document. It is 920 pages long. It's out there for everyone to read. Matt, to start off with you, what's interesting about reading information at the Heritage website is they said, you know, we've put a plan in place before. We put a plan in place for Ronald Reagan, but he didn't have it in time to implement it on day one. And they're saying the reason why they did this well in advance is to ensure that this is implemented in the first 180 days of a potential second Trump administration. Can you talk more about that? Because I think that's an interesting fact that is not being discussed that much in media coverage.
Yeah, I think that really highlights kind of what's so alarming about Project 2025. Is clear this has been in the works for a while. And I think if you look at the first Trump presidency, there are a lot of calls of that being the beginning of an authoritative presidency. What it really was setting the stage for what Project 2025 wants to do, which is actually implement that. And by doing so, it really lays out step by step what to do on day one, day two, who to purge from the government, what steps to take in each department to kind of fulfill this long-running right-wing prophecy for remaking the country into a Christian nationalist nation. You have things in there like in the Department of Homeland Security to kind of get rid of the department's cybersecurity and infrastructure security agency, which basically is in charge of monitoring election threats and voting disinformation, things like that, and to kind of move it to the Department of Transportation, which has nothing to do with security, election security. So this 180-day plan really just spells out to the most minute detail what the next Trump administration would be doing in those 180 days.
John, we're going to talk about the 100 groups that worked with Heritage on this in a minute, but what are your thoughts about the fact that they put this out so early and are proudly letting people know what they want to happen for the first 180 days?
Well, I think they put it out early because this is a project that they're actually quite proud of. And also because this is a way of organizing the Trump base. And one of the things to understand is that while many progressives were very disappointed by, even horrified by Donald Trump's presidency, many conservatives, especially powerful insider conservatives, and many who influence the donor class, i.e. conservative big money donors, were also dissatisfied with the Trump presidency. They thought that Donald Trump's tenure in office from January 20 of 2017 till January 20 of 2021 was unfocused, erratic, chaotic, often destructive to their own agendas, to their own ideas. And they thought a lot of that rooted back to Trump, because he seemed to not be prepared to serve as president, that he was an unrooted, kind of unprepared individual with little knowledge of politics, little knowledge of governance. And so one of the things that they set out to do when it became clear that Trump was going to be the Republican nominee, and that became clear, you know, some time ago, when that came into evidence, they decided, well, okay, we know those concerns are there. We are going to bring those who've been concerned into the circle. We will ask them to literally write the agenda, write the proposals. We'll get Trump and others to buy into this. And we will effectively quiet that concern because we will say that here's the plan. A second Trump term will not be chaotic. It will not be unfocused. It will, in fact, follow a very strict, very precise agenda, and that agenda will get corporations, the tax cuts, the regulatory drawbacks, the radical rewrites of government oversight that they want. It will get social conservatives, the things that they always feel they're cheated out of by Republican administrations, and that is a top-to-bottom assault on abortion rights, LGBTQ rights, women's rights, et cetera. And it will get the political activists around Trump and those associated with him, what they want, which is something akin to absolute power. So this is a well-thought, coordinated effort to respond to the concerns about the first Trump presidency, but not the concerns that progressives have, or not the concerns I think that most Americans have, to the concerns of a narrow circle of Republican, conservative, and corporate insiders.
And Tony, another major change that would allow Trump to implement what John is talking about is that civil servants would be fired. Over 50,000 people. I mean, Kevin Roberts was asked about this on MSNBC of the Heritage Foundation. He said, we're going to get rid of over 50,000 people and replace them with Trump loyalists. They're also going to get rid of major governmental entities like the Department of Education and NOAA. So that's how they're going to push all of this through. What are your thoughts about why they put this out so soon and so publicly?
Well, I agree with what Matt and John were saying. Like they're very proud of this. They're very open about what the agenda that they would like to see should they get power in 2025. But one thing that you played that Kevin Roberts recently said was that the goal here is not about conservatism, it's about instituting Trumpism. And to me, what is Trumpism? Mm-hmm. Trumpism is loyalty to a person, not an ideology above all else. And what you're seeing with this Project 2025 is orienting the entire federal government around loyalty to one person, which I think is anathema to the entire American system. This guts our checks and balances. It's no longer talking about checks and balances. It's talking about what does one person say and let's do that. I think the second pillar of Trumpism is also, as John was saying, is like using this loyalty to one person, but as a disguise to give power to corporate special interests to let them have more tax breaks, more power and control over our life, about who to love, what we can do with our bodies, allowing corporations to, charge us whatever they want. And like they have the power in this instance. And this is a way to get rid of any checks and balances that might be in place and get around that to enact this agenda, which I would also say at the same time that that conservatives are really proud of this agenda, when people learn about this, it is extremely unpopular. There are numerous amounts of policies, and we've touched on just a few of them in the entire manifesto, but looking at them, this is broadly unpopular with the American people.
And we're going to drill down on what this would do in the coming months, because it would affect all aspects of life. Let's spend a little bit of time talking about who has been involved with this. So the Heritage Foundation gets the most attention, but close to about 100 right-wing groups have also worked on this and thrown their support behind Project 2025. Matt, you wrote about this. They include America First Legal, Moms for Liberty. We've done some shows about that. And it also was written by, quote, more than 400 scholars and policy experts from across the conservative movement and around the country. You point out that includes former Trump administration officials and notable right-wing figures like former Acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller, former Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security Ken Cuccinelli, and Peter Navarro, a former top trade advisor to Trump. Can you tell us what else strikes you about who has been involved in Project 2025?
I think the most striking thing is just the sheer magnitude of all of these entities working together. I spend a lot of my time digging into a lot of these groups and kind of exposing how they are in their own individual ways trying to kind of thwart democracy. And what we do at Democracy Docket is tracking a lot of the anti-voting litigation in the courts. And so I spent a lot of time looking at the filings of America First Legal and the Public Interest Legal Foundation and all these other groups. And the thing that I always kind of joke about with my colleagues is that, the way that they are kind of filing these lawsuits in the courts are in such a way that they're never on top of each other. They're always kind of in concert with each other. And so I kind of always joke that, like, there's got to be some mass coordination between all of these groups, because this kind of assault on democracy is coming from every which way, and they're never kind of stepping on each other's toes. And I think Project 2025 is that kind of smoking gun, that kind of confirmation that all of these groups that I cover, that John covers and Tony and Accountable, that they are indeed extremely coordinated. They are working together, and they you could see, you know, the blueprints of what each of these groups are about in Project 2025. You know, the Department of Education has long been a target of Moms for Liberty. And so to see that get eradicated, you can really see the DNA of all these individual groups in the minute details of Project 2025.
John, you write so much about organizing and how it's done on many levels. What are your thoughts about how they have been able to bring together so many organizations with different end games, but they've all been able to agree to this massive document?
Well, power is very intoxicating, right? It's very appealing. If you have a party and you say, hey, let's get together, none of us have power and none of us have potential to have power. And so we're just all going to sit here and whine about what we don't have. That's not very attractive. But if you say, hey, let's get everybody together, either physically, and they often do gather, by the way, at conferences and in meetings in DC, or via Zoom, via, you know, all sorts of other communications, to talk about what we will do when we have immense power, right? When we get ourselves in a position where we really can do what we want. Well, that's, everybody's going to show up for that. Even if they may have disagreements, even if they're operating in the circle of people they disagree with. And so that's where the Heritage Foundation, which has a lot of history, was a very effective convener here. Wasn't the only convener, but very effective in this regard. Everybody knows Heritage. Everybody, you know, sees it as a conservative operation that has adjusted to Trump, i.e. it didn't necessarily love him at first, but it's come to see the potential that Trump offers for getting power and exercising it. And so they brought folks in. And one of the things that they did that was really fascinating is they allowed for a measure of disagreement. If you look in Project 2025 in the documentation, you look at the section on trade policy, for instance, as international trade, you will see within there, you know, some different sensibilities. You even see some different sensibilities as regards how aggressively they might go after trade unions and things of that nature. And the reason that they've done that is because they want everybody in on this. They don't want a right-wing critique of Project 2025 that says, oh, well, it doesn't go far enough on this, it doesn't go far enough on that. So they've even allowed for a little bit of debate within the document, within the project. The reason for that is because the core elements of it, they are all agreed on, right? And this is very much like a Republican convention where you're doing the platform. The core elements of a platform aren't too hard to put together anymore because they've forced out of the party most of the people who disagree. And it's similar here. So organizing wasn't that hard. What's important to understand is that as you read through this document, what was done primarily, the overall document, was to give a measure of authority, you know, kind of writing authority, directing authority, to people who are recognized experts in certain areas. And so on the right, and even on the far right, they know certain people who've worked on media issues. They know certain people who've worked on democracy issues. They know certain people who've worked on taxation issues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those people were given, you know, a chance in a high profile way to write their section of the report. And does everybody who's involved with Project 2025 agree with every word that's in it? No. But from an organizing standpoint, they have had the wisdom to say, hey, you know, we're going to give everybody a good chance to get 95, 100% of what they want. And at the very least, we're creating the framework for government, for the executive branch of government going forward. And that's something you want to be in on, not something you want to be on the outside of.
Right. And as we heard in the clip from Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, this is really a document for the conservative movement for decades to come. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we're going to really drill down here, but I do wonder, what really stands out for you all? I mean, just reading some of the excerpts from Project 2025, it just bears repeating. And here's an article from February, Melissa Guerra Grant from The New Republic. And she writes that the 900 pages lay out a Christian nationalist vision of the United States, one in which married heterosexuality is the only valid form of sexual expression and identity. All pregnancies would be carried to term, even if that requires coercion or death. Transgender and gender nonconforming people do not exist. Healthcare providers, educators, employers, and the government's own civil rights informis apparatus, among many others, would be marshaled to ensure our acquiescence in this dictatorial male supremacist society. She goes on to talk about how, you know, establish not individuals but families, specifically one married mother, one father, and their biological children as the basis for governmental policy. Tony, I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Even reading some of these things, I'm sure a lot of people would say is pretty darn shocking. But again, it's all in the document for everyone to read.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. I would say a couple things. I think that everything that you just outlined in that article shows how the conservative movement of Project 2025 and their backers want total control over our country and our lives. And this is like the things that you mentioned is just that it's at the expense of our freedoms. And I think what stuck out to me from this manifesto is, one, how comprehensive it is and goes in, like, office by office in some cases about having some policies that they want to implement. But two, how it's very much about concentrating power into the presidency by gutting our checks and balances, but in, you know, offering a playbook of how to enact that. But the other piece of this, and I think Kevin Roberts mentioned this from Heritage Foundation in the clip, is that the other piece is that they're collecting resumes right now of like-minded people that they can put into these positions of power to enact this agenda. So it's not just here's a policy proposal for you. The other part of this is like we're getting people ready to go that in the first 180 days can just be there and get this going. So it's what they believe, but they're also thinking through who is going to carry this out. And you look at like what John was mentioning about the authors and people that are writing some of this down. You know, we have like former Trump administration officials that, you know, like Roger Severino, for example, who's, you know, a pretty right wing, you know, like national abortion ban, like I think anti-IVF, like writing down like what's going on, what the Department of Health and Human Services would look like, the former Bureau of Labor and Land Management Administrator, William Perry Penley, was basically writing how we should take all of our federal public lands and put them up to sale to the highest bidder. And also, if you look into that chapter itself, you see that was, he let like the oil and gas industry basically write that chapter. So it's instituting Trumpism, like I said before. But it's also allowing big special interests, big corporations, giving them more power and letting them basically write their own rules.
We're going to take a quick break. Today, we are beginning a series on Project 2025, a 920-page Heritage Foundation-led authoritarian plan that would guide a second Trump administration and transform the United States into a far-right Christian nationalist country. You can read the entire document. Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, recently went on MSNBC to talk more about this. We will invite him to join a future show. This is all out for the public to read. They say this is a plan for Trumpism and the conservative movement for decades to come. If you have any questions or comments about Project 2025, we are so glad that it's finally getting a lot of media coverage. What are your thoughts about what you've heard so far? And what would you like us to focus on in this series? You can email your call at kalw.org. We're joined today by Tony Kark, Executive Director of Accountable.us, John Nichols, National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation, and Matt Cohen, Senior Staff Writer with Democracy Docket. We'll be back after this. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are launching a special series on Project 2025. It is a Heritage Foundation-led authoritarian plan that would dismantle the administrative state and ensure arch-conservative rule for decades to come. Project 2025 would affect nearly all aspects of life and would be implemented by expanding presidential powers and eliminating federal agencies. Today, we're joined by Matt Cohen, senior staff writer with Democracy Docket, an online news platform about voting rights and elections in the courts. He authored a Project 2025 guide for Democracy Docket. John Nichols is national affairs correspondent for The Nation and the author of many bestsellers, including his latest, co-written with Senator Bernie Sanders, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. The Nation recently published a special series on Project 2025, and John's piece is The Guide to Subverting Democracy. Tony Kark is executive director of Accountable.us, an organization that exposes conflicts of interests and shines a light on powerful special interests. Accountable.us has also launched a campaign called Expose Project 2025. John, I'd love for you to also talk about what stands out for you. I just want to mention that the elimination of the federal departments, of course, that is so important. That's getting a lot of attention. What I feel is not getting enough attention is how this would affect marginalized people, low-income people, workers who struggle to make ends meet. And Democracy Forward put together a people's outline of how Project 2025 would affect all of us. It would limit access to food assistance, which an average of more than 40 million people rely on monthly. It would eliminate the Head Start early education program, which serves over a million children. It would cut overtime protections for 4.3 million workers. And I need to read more about this. I don't know the details yet, but it would expose, according to Democracy Forward, expose 368,000 children in foster care to risk of increased discrimination. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to really talk about how this would affect the most marginalized people in this country.
Well, you're exactly right. And this is a roughly 1,000-page document. And so within it, you have all sorts of kind of wish lists, if you will, for the anti-government right. Remember, and the anti-government right is not anti-power. That's an important thing to understand. They want power. They want to control the infrastructure of government. But with that power, they want to make sure that, frankly, it doesn't deliver a lot of what it has traditionally delivered. And what their complaint has always been that in our very imperfect democratic republic, when they get an election win, when Republicans, conservatives get an election win, it's still almost impossible for them to deconstruct the programs that they have never liked, like Head Start, like a food program, even many will argue like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And the reason for that is that you may have a president, but that president's got to deal with Congress and with the courts, and frankly, with a federal government, which is full of people who, you know, are hired and given responsibility for implementing programs that exist, not to deconstruct them or ruin them. And so for the folks behind Project 2025, what they have done is they have invited in longtime critics of different agencies, of the Department of Education, of Department of Health and Human Services, of Department of Housing, Labor Department, et cetera. And they've said, hey, if you had control of this, real control, and if you could implement not just, you know, an agenda verbally, but if you could actually start to do it, go into the sinews of government and make it happen, what would you do? And that's what they put there. And so that's what you're describing. Mm-hmm. Now, the way to respond to that is to understand that the Project 2025 document should be read by every activist on economic and social and racial justice, peace, environmental protection in America. You got to take that couple days, whatever it takes, to read through the whole thing. Why do I say read through the whole thing? Because the mistake is to simply read in your area of expertise or specialty and to assume that's the only thing that will touch, you know, your concerns. What I did when I read through the whole document was find that many ideas weave through different sections, ideas on labor rights, for instance, weaving through sections on unions, but also sections on trade policy, sections on workplace and safety and all sorts of other things.
on the somewhat separate from this, but on the issue of democracy, if you look through it, you're going to find, you know, assaults on democracy woven through all sorts of different sections. As regards media, you'll find, you know, scheming to protect right-wing media, undermine progressive media, or even mainstream media, you know, woven through different sections. And so my counsel is read the whole document, read it with a careful eye, and look for all of the ways in which a program to, or an agenda to protect a marginalized group, or a particularly vulnerable group, or a historically victimized group, where you can find all of those elements. And what you're going to find is they're in different places. And in addition to all the stated assaults, which you've run through a couple of rows, also read for what the assault on democracy, which runs through the whole document, what that will do to groups that organize seeking a fairer portion of this society's largesse. If you wreck democracy and make democracy irrelevant, then it becomes dramatically harder for historically marginalized groups to unite, organize, and assert their demands. And so this is a document that should be read broadly with a lot of focus in a lot of different areas, and then pull that together and then yell and scream about it. Make a lot of noise.
A few other things Project 2025 would do, according to Democracy Forward: it would stop efforts to lower prescription drugs, it would push more people towards Medicare Advantage and other private options, it would deny students in 25 states and DC access to student loans because their school provides in-state tuition to undocumented immigrants. Before we get to calls, Matt, why don't you jump in here? What really stands out for you?
Well, yeah, you know, I agree with everything John and Tony say, but you know, the one thing that I really do want to highlight is that it's so much more than a policy plan. I mean, it's a massive document, but the thing that really struck me is that this really reads like a portrait of America, of the country that conservatives have been salivating to create for decades. It really does feel like the culmination of these decades of efforts, and it really does read like the Trumpism and the GOP see that this is their moment to kind of really to enact this plan. And, you know, I think that is, like John said, that's woven throughout the document. And if you really spend some time kind of going through the minutiae, you'll just find more and more things to be shocked and horrified about. I mean, you know, for example, we're here talking about this on public radio. In Project 2025, it calls for defunding NPR and PBS and really all of the kind of tenets that make democracy democracy, which is a fair and open media. And so, that's just the thing that I really want to highlight is that I agree with John that everyone should take the time to read this and look at it as this this portrait of America that is very close to being reality.
Just, Rose, can I jump in for one sec?
Yes,
I
please,
apologize.
John.
Really super apologies, but very important point was brought up just there about why it's so important to read so closely. That reference to public radio and community radio. One of the things Project 2025 also proposes is potentially taking away the bands that community stations are currently on. So this station that we're on right now could lose its place on the radio dial under a proposal within Project 2025. Might be able to turn up someplace else, but that's how minute and also how radical some of the agendas that are within the document really turn out to be.
This is important, John. As you write in your piece, Project 2025 would end the status of NPR and Pacifica radio stations as, quote, non-commercial education stations. Mm-hmm. That could deny them their current channel numbers at the low end of the spectrum. So we're 91.7. It would be 88 to 92, a move that would open prime territory on the dial for the sort of religious programming that already claims roughly 42% of the airwaves that the FCC reserves for non-commercial broadcasting. John, a lot of these plans sound so far out, but I'm sure a lot of listeners are saying, oh, come on, that could never happen.
Yeah, of course. You know, you could never overturn Roe v. Wade. Right. That would never happen. And you could never, you're never going to get even a conservative U.S. Supreme Court to assert, you know, pretty much blanket immunity for a president or even potentially a former president of the United States. That would never happen. It's so antithetical to the Constitution. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that will never happen until the day they happen.
John Nichols is national affairs correspondent for The Nation. We're also joined by Matt Cohen, senior staff writer with Democracy Docket, and Tony Kark, executive director of Accountable.us. On today's Your Call, we are launching a special ongoing series on Project 2025. It is a massive Heritage Foundation-led authoritarian plan that would guide a second Trump administration and radically transform all aspects of U.S. life. Let's take a few callers and then we'll let our guests respond. Let's go to Dio in Berkeley. Hi, Dio. Thank you for holding.
Good morning. I love your show. I call in all the time.
Thank you.
Trump corrupted the highest level of courts. So at this point, we have to start getting ready, right? California has the biggest economy in the United States. We have pull. Why don't we start talking about succession? Because honestly, nobody in California, he's coming after us. He hates California because we have the biggest economy and we're probably the biggest pain in the butt for him. Is succession a reality? Can we start planning for this disaster?
Well, thank you for the call, Dio. We'll get a response in just a few minutes. Let's hear from Suzanne in Healdsburg. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Rose. I just love you. Anyway, I would like to ask, why isn't the main media talking about this? Number one. Number two, all Republicans are not far right. So between the Democrats and the regular Republicans, how are they not going to try to stop any of this?
All right. Thank you for those questions, Suzanne. Let's take one more caller, and then we'll get responses. Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. I'm surprised that more Democrats haven't been speaking about this up to date. Seems to me that the Democrats in every state need to make this a key of their running platform. So should Biden. I don't know if Biden's the right person to articulate this, but I do think in the states, every state throughout that state, the Democratic Party ought to be pushing this thing, as well as how far things have already gone to the right with the Supreme Court and the Congress that we've got. Just finish one thing. Last night I listened to BBC. There was interviewing people who voted Labor in past elections for years. We're not going to do it because they were saying Labor hasn't done anything for us. So the Democrats have to lay out a positive side of this too. What they've done and what they plan to do for working class, ordinary Americans.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for all of those questions. First off, let's talk about media coverage of this. I was really hoping that during the CNN debate, they would have asked about Project 2025. Unfortunately, they didn't. John, it's getting more attention than ever in the media, on social media. What are your thoughts about how major media outlets are covering Project 2025?
Well, it's catching up a little bit. And if you are paying attention, if you're trying to find it, you can find it. One of the biggest mistakes that we make as journalists and as citizens is to assume that the responsibility of media has been met when someone can search out a piece of information. That is not the responsibility of journalism, at least in a free and small d democratic society. The responsibility of journalism is to make sure that people actually know what's going on and know it in a immediate and relatively urgent way. And that has not happened. Project 2025 has been more of a feature story than a lead story, if you will, speaking in the parlance of journalism. And it has to move up there. There has to be a greater sense of urgency. The problem is that we are literally in a period of moving from crisis to crisis, right? We've got Supreme Court rulings on immunity. We've got Joe Biden blowing a debate. We've got now the possibility that you may even have a restructuring of the Democratic ticket. And this is all news as well. And so Project 2025 kind of gets put, you know, a little bit to the side. The answer to the caller's kind of inquiries in this regard, is that the Democrats, if they're serious about not wanting this, if they're serious about wanting to make an issue of this, they need to find a bold, creative way in which to push back, right? And I see two ways to do that. One is to think very seriously about making the Democratic platform, at, which will be agreed to by the convention, a specific response to Project 2025, to literally say, you know, Project 2025 is this, we are this, and this is what we will seek to defend. This is, you know, and kind of bring the context up. It would still be the standard Democratic platform in many ways, but to use that vehicle. Another response is to take some of the hundreds of millions of dollars that the Democratic Party and its candidates will have, even into the billions of dollars, to run their campaigns, their media campaigns, and use it to do education. Too often our, in politics, the money is spent, you know, on attack ads and on, you know, things that frankly lack much, they don't add much to the discourse. This is an opportunity to, in a targeted way, say, hey, we want you to know about something, right? And I think there are ways to kind of raise the profile, but that hasn't really happened yet. Project 2025 still remains largely a subject of discussion on the margins of the American political discourse. It needs to be much closer to the center of it.
Matt, what are your thoughts on media coverage?
I agree with everything that John said. You know, it is sort of baffling that this has been out in the open for a while now. You know, my colleagues at Democracy Docket and I have been covering this for months. John, you know, your magazine's cover story package on it was a few months ago. So a lot of us have been covering this. And, you know, I don't know for sure why the mainstream media has kind of failed to pick up on the story. I think John is onto something about, you know, we're just getting beaten down with crisis after crisis, that, it, you know, it's kind of a capacity issue. And when you're asked to cover a 1,000-page document and kind of respond thoughtfully to it, you know, speaking for myself, but probably, you know, other journalists out there, it's we have a lot on our plate. So to take the time to do that is a lot. But one important thing that I want to point out is that it is starting to move towards the center of conversation. You know, I don't know if y'all are aware, at the BET Awards this weekend, Taraji P. Henson, during her speech, made a blunt call out about Project 2025 and to tell people to read up on it, because it's something that is a threat to democracy. You know, just I think it was yesterday on the Real America's Voices War Room, Kevin Roberts, who we heard from in clips earlier, was talking about the Supreme Court's immunity decision and just said the quiet part out loud, which is, we're in the process of the second American Revolution, which will remain bloodless if the left allows it. I mean, if that's not a call for the media to be covering this as thoroughly as it can, I don't know what is. But I can see it starting to happen, and I think you're going to see a lot more sort of front page coverage of Project 2025.
You know, we're going to play that clip in just a minute. I think it's important to hear. I wonder, Tony, if you have anything to add about media coverage and then responses to other comments from our guests. Adio in Berkeley says that California should secede if this happens. Suzanne says, you know, not all Republicans are MAGA Republicans, of course. What are they doing to stop this? Greg, why aren't more Democrats speaking up? And we should say that Congressman Jared Huffman announced the formation of a working group to stop Project 2025. He started this last month. It seems like most of the founding members are part of the Progressive Caucus. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with what Matt and John were saying. In terms of media coverage, it's obviously picking up more recently. I would also just add, like last week, Tonight with John Oliver, when he did his segment, that I think that was a pretty good galvanizing force for progressives to, you know, to have this breakthrough into more mainstream ways. And as you were saying, Rose, about like Congressman Huffman and others have just started a task force about 20. So Democratic House members are seeing this threat and responding to it. I think one of the reasons that it's been it's been a little laggard in terms of getting more coverage. Is something that John was mentioning a few minutes ago, is that the believability, like that there's this, could this really happen? There's a way that this, you know, we have checks and balances in a way that can stop, a president from doing X, or, you know, weaponizing, just getting rid of like the independence of the Department of Justice, or doing, or Congress could stop this, or the courts can do that. Like, this agenda won't actually happen. And I think what people are realizing is that there is an actual plan to get around all of that. That's, so I know I keep saying gutting checks and balances, like that's what I'm talking about. They have a plan to get around all these checks, whether it's finding the people who stood in the way before and removing them and putting in loyalists, whether it's just figuring out what other levers of power that they can pull to get the, to give them more power over our lives. So I think that, you know, that could be a piece that it's becoming a little bit more real, number one.
To that point, Tony, sorry to cut you off, just a quick question. People are wondering if the Democrats, okay, let's say Trump takes the White House. If the Democrats take the House or the Senate, couldn't they stand in the way of a lot of this? But what I'm reading is that they're going to do a lot of this by executive action. And then, of course, they're going to use the Supreme Court immunity ruling to get a lot of this done.
Right. Well, I would say that a lot of what the conservatives have put in Project 2025 is an approach to the executive branch alone. Like, some of there is some in there about legislation in Congress, and there's obviously congressional oversight and everything, but they're thinking through how to remake and consolidate power into the Oval Office and get rid of the independence of other departments or federal agencies. So there's a lot that can be done that wouldn't need Congress. So that, I think that is like showing like there aren't other isms that can prevent some of these things from happening. And I think that's what's making it more real and more alarming for folks as they're reading and finding out more about that. I would say another thing that we know, though, is that not a lot of people know about Project 2025, but as they learn more, and this is to the caller who talked about, you know, like of the like not just like the one faction of like Republican voters, but looking at like moderates, independents, there's just broad opposition to this plan. So I really am happy to see the more activity that's happening among coalition partners on the progressive side, mainstream media, like just showing what this plan will do and how it would impact people's lives. Because we know when people learn about this, that they're really opposed to what's going on. And the best way to think about how to stop it is to never let it happen in the first place. So, you know, that's one of the things that we're trying to do at Accountable, is just give people the facts about like who's behind this plan, what their agenda is, what they're trying to do, and also to say you need to believe them when they tell you what they want to do. And I just, but lastly, I would just say, you know, this is sort of, you know, this is bigger than conservative versus progressive. Like in some, like this is democracy versus authoritarianism. This is, you know, there's just, this is a bigger fight that we're having here about who we are as Americans. And I think that is a fight worth having.
We don't have time to play the clip, but Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, right after the Supreme Court immunity ruling, said, "We are in the process of the second American Revolution, which will remain bloodless if the left allows it to be." John Nichols, final thoughts from you? We have about a minute left.
Sure. My final thought is this is a big deal. We've talked a lot about a lot of stuff, and in a show like this, it's very easy to, kind of pick up bits and pieces. This is one of those points where I think it's very important what journalists do. I think it's equally important what citizens do. This is one of those cases where it is appropriate to go. You can go to the Nation story. You can go to the private things that other folks on this show have done. You can actually read Project 2025 yourself. It's worth doing it. It's worth becoming a little bit obsessed. And it's worth then, with that obsession, going out and talking to your friends and neighbors and even some of your relatives who might be Republicans and might be conservatives about the genuine threat to the Republic that Project 2025 poses.
And you can read it online, project2025.org. We also have lots of links at yourcallradio.org. Matt Cohen, final thoughts from you, about a minute?
Yeah, you know, during this campaign season and the last time Trump was campaigning, the media covered a lot of, you know, the kind of rambling, incoherent nonsense that Trump said at campaign rallies, and really kind of treated that in a lighthearted way. And I think this is the complete antithesis of that. Like John said, this is big, this is dangerous. And, you know, I think people need to take the time to read it. And I think anytime, you know, this is bigger than Trump, essentially. And when people are making their decisions to vote in the upcoming election, I think this is the main thing that people should look at to make those decisions.
Matt Cohen is senior staff writer with Democracy Docket. He authored a Project 2025 guide for Democracy Docket. John Nichols is national affairs correspondent for The Nation and the author of many bestsellers. The Nation published a special series on Project 2025. John's piece looks at the guide to subverting democracy. Tony Kark is executive director for Accountable US. They launched a campaign called Expose Project 2025. Matt, John, and Tony, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Honored to be with you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We are going to do a regular series on Project 2025. If you have any show ideas, specific topics you'd like us to discuss, guests you'd like us to bring on, we'd love to hear from you. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. Also, I hope you can go online to check out the show we did on Project 2025 last year. In August, with The Guardian's Darna Noor, about the plan to dismantle climate policies in Project 2025. Thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And you can find all of the articles we discussed today at kalw.org. Click on News and then Your Call. Thank you for joining us. Tune in next Monday to learn more about what exactly is in the far right's 900-page authoritarian playbook, Project 2025. I'm Rose Aguilar. This is KALW, San Francisco Bay Area.